3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome everyone to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD, a marketing services firm that delivers the future to healthcare's leading brands. This show is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, all focused around the future of healthcare marketing and communications. I'm your host, Ezra Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at BPD, and I'm joined by Chris Bevel, Chief Transformation Officer here. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Des. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Great. It's great, Des.
Well, glad to hear it's not all doom and gloom over there. We are also joined by a special guest, a friend of the pod, Ryan Coliani, Chief Communications Officer here at BPD. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. What's going on with you? What's new?
It's good and great to be here, just as Chris said, good and great.
I love this theme. All right. So on today's show, we will be covering the HBO Max brand whiplash, as well as some branding hills we'll die on. But we really want to dive into the future of the CMO and looking at some of the opportunities that marketers have in this world. But first, the CMO report, it is out now. You are able to grab a link of that in the show notes here. And then also, if you can't get enough of the No Normal Show, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter, The No Normal Rewind, which recaps the discussions you hear on our show with some extra insights you won't find anywhere else. So let's dive in. What's going on with HBO Max? So there has been a bit of a whiplash. HBO became HBO Max and HBO Go and all the things in that. And then it became Max. It really put a foothold on We Are Max. And then that has been re-evaluated. And now they're allegedly going back to HBO Max. Like, why? What is happening? Chris, what's your take?
My take is that I've never seen anything more idiotic in my entire life. Like, the shift to HBO Max and then to Max was criticized as maybe one of the stupidest brand identity shifts of all time. Just that. Right. But now we're finally just like everybody's just moved on like they should. And we're like, okay, it's Max. Fine. And what is happening?
Are they going to bring back like the static sound start to every show? Because every time I hear that, I want to do the Curb Your Enthusiasm, bum, 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 every time that happens, no matter what. So they should bring that back and then I'm in. But yeah.
You mean the click that goes.
Yeah. Or remember back in the old days, like in the 80s, there was all like the cities lighting up. Like, let's bring that whole thing
flying
back.
Over. Yeah.
I mean, exactly why they should not have left HBO branding to begin with. It's like, it's a household name. It's kind of like with Netflix. It's the sound you hear it, you know, it's about to come on. I remember there was a movie that they produced that had like the retro HBO logo that was just like, oh, so amazing. But some other examples of brands that have done this, I know Google, Chris, you've talked a little bit about this, and like there's a bit of the kind of the original name of like where that came from and where it's kind of going today.
I don't know anything about it other than it was Backrub, which is a very legitimate brand shift. Google is nonsensical. Google was a mistake, right? It was actually a mistaken spelling of what they wanted to be, but it stuck. But they didn't go back to Backrub or the appropriate spelling of Google. I think it was Googleplex or something. They just stuck with Google, which is nonsensical, but doesn't matter because as somebody wise once told me, the brand makes the name, not the other way around. So HBO Max, quit fiddling, just leave it be and move on.
Does this mean that Google is going to bring back Google Plus? Because maybe it'll be HBO Plus one day. I mean, everybody's adding pluses to things.
No.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, why would you just think about this? Why would you have HBO and you have Cinemax and you're going to go with Cinemax as your primary brand? I'm like, what? Who thinks Cinemax is the trash version of HBO? That's how everybody thinks about it. It's the Dollar General to HBO's Nordstrom's.
Wow.
And you're going to go with the Dollar General brand.
Well, this is how dumb I am. Awful. I didn't even make that connection, Chris. I didn't realize it was HBO Max from Cinemax. Like, I knew they owned each other. I also don't think Cinemax exists anymore. But I didn't even realize that connection.
Well, if it wasn't intentional for people like me that are old enough to have grown up on Cinemax, It was. I assume that's what it was. I don't really know, to be honest. To be fair, maybe it wasn't, but they were owned by the same company, 100%. And it was kind of like the rundown version of HBO, where you put cheap shit on there because it didn't meet HBO standards. So whether they meant it or not, that was what it invoked for Gen X.
Gen X.
Lost the value of, to Des's point, I mean, HBO is the brand. So let's double down on what people know it for and what they've known about it for decades.
And one last example that's more true to my heart, and it also has to do with the experience of the brand. Starbucks, they've kind of gone back and forth with, you know, who they are. And there was a recent couple of articles and conversations around them adding the coffee back into their name and the brand and like who they are, which if you look at their website, it's even really kind of hard to find like where they've added the coffee back. But it's all in the name of getting back to the actual original experience of Starbucks, which was going there as a place to hang out. It was that third place. And I remember in college, like that was like the thing to go do. It was like, oh, I'm going to go hang out at Starbucks. And now it's just so super transactional. You just like order from your phone. You go and pick up. You're like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to walk in, grab my coffee and leave. But it's been really interesting to see them kind of try to go back to that original roots of the experience. But who knows if that'll actually take off, because you've trained us to just like look at our phone and do the thing. But I don't know.
Well, what isn't it? It's even more distinctive that they're going to coffee store or coffee shop, which is a coffee store, coffee company.
Coffee company.
I don't even know. It's company. I don't think anybody ever thought Starbucks was anything but coffee. Of course, they have other things. But there's never been like, oh, wow, now you're just like a grocery store. It's coffee. That's what people go there for. It's the coffee company vibe that you're talking about, Des, that is just the meaningful shift, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know what are they going to do, close their drive-thrus? Like, I don't know how they really pull that off, but.
They write the names on the coffee cups now. They're back to doing that. That makes the personal experience. So
that ever went away? I didn't even know that went away.
I thought they came back. The new guy wanted to have everybody have the Sharpies back. So they had to like ship all the stores a million Sharpies so that they can start doing that again.
Also, they need to get the comfy seating back because it just does not give place that I want to hang out in at all anymore. But
was there a time where they were going to sell wine? It was going to be a bar in the afternoons too. So maybe that's the next play.
I've missed that. They've done that with the Starbucks Reserve. But I don't know about the regular Starbucks.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
All right. So moving on to our next topic, which is kind of getting into the experience world, looking at The Hills We'll Die On. And as I think about this, the hill that I'll die on is that essentially within healthcare, essentially you were in the business of hospitality. It's in the name. You're a hospital, your hospitality. So they should be thinking and acting more like that. I'm thinking more about that patient experience, not necessarily about the other things. But I don't know. That's just my heel. I feel like there should be more of a focus on the experience and hospitality. But point, counterpoint, what are your thoughts? Chris, go, because I'm sure you are going to be.
No, I'll let Ryan go first. I want to hear Ryan's first.
I have a cynical business of healthcare take to this that I agree with Des that it's required because as there are fewer and fewer commercial patients, hospitals need to appeal as much as possible to that audience. And that requires doing things like you're not going to have somebody sharing your inpatient room with you. You're going to have a nice view from the window. We're going to get good food and all those types of things. They're going to try to strive for the higher patient satisfaction scores. Like all those types of things essentially it's a business argument to take the hospitality approach. I don't know if anybody is thinking about it that way as from a CMO perspective, but that ultimately, if you're going to want to drive volumes, you're going to have to improve the patient experience, particularly in large markets where there's multiple competitors. So that's my perspective there.
Okay. So we've got experience and we've got business. Chris, what's your take?
I agree with business. I agree. We've said forever that the experience is the number one way to build your brand. The best brands in this space, like Mayo Clinic, have the best experiences. And it does draw people. People come in whether they know it's a good experience or not, but then they have one, they tell other people, and word of mouth is the number one driver of patient choice. So I'm in on all of that. Where I get hung up is hospitality. Maybe that's semantics, but I do think like there's, I used to be the the strongest advocate for hospitality and experience. And for some reason, I don't know why, I've come back around to maybe we're going too far with this. There's always been a balance with it, but it's the pit. The pit keeps shaping my view on things, the show. And within the first 5 minutes of that whole show starting, the administrators haranguing Noah Wiley, the head of the chief ER doctor, about his Prescani scores. And he says things like, a patient should be satisfied if they're alive, which in the ER is fair. And then she says something like, but you want them to rate us higher, like rank us higher online. And he's like, we're not a Taco Bell, we're an ER. And so that's where I get torn more than I used to, is I'm a purist in everything. So for me, it was always, you got to have a great experience. Doctors need to get on board. Nurses need to get on board. And now I kind of actually fall more on their side and defend them more. Like, let them save lives, for crying out loud. It's the two-cent nation, Des. I'm tired of the two-cent nation. So I'm rebelling a bit against people who are going to go online and flame a cancer doctor who saved their life because the Golf Digest was 3 years old.
Wow, a stretch. Criticism.
Not a stretch. Not a stretch.
Okay, but there is a difference between, like, what, I mean, the ER experience is going to be what it is because it's, you're moving fast and it's very much urgent, right? Versus the rest of the health system and hospital, right? ER is only one part, or the ED is only one part of the equation. But the rest, it's almost like once you get through the ER and then you are kind of taking up to your room to be more kind of watched and looked after, that's where it does start to get more into the hospitality situation. But it's not just that. It's also the regular, just the intake of coming in for a regular visit, a checkup, where you have to go through all of this rigmarole and fill out all of this paperwork 15 different times that we're kind of talking about. So I hear you on that piece of it. But there are multiple.
See, that's the distinction. Let's put it this way. All the things that you talked about in terms of scheduling, the process, that should be smooth. That should be easy. I agree with all that. Should people be able to order their own food when they're in a hospital room? Like, I would like to order a steak with red potatoes and lightly grilled asparagus. Or should they be able to pick from three options that are on the menu? That's hospitality. Hospitality is that kind of stuff to me in my brain. That's different than how quickly can we get you through the process.
That sounds like a restaurant.
That's what I'm saying, but there are people that complain about that stuff. So you're not in a restaurant. You're in a hospital. You just had an appendectomy. To expect hospitality the way a restaurant would give it is where I would say no. Am I wrong? Yeah.
I don't know. If those are the reviews, then that's wild to me because, yeah, that's... but I guess I'm looking at more of just, like, how can you reduce friction of, like, actually kind of going in and using the services. But, again...
That's fair. See, I hear that different than hospitality. Friction and hospitality. Hospitality is the next level, right?
Next level.
It's the difference between checking in at the hotel and having mobile key and be able to go right to your room. That to me is not hospitality. That's just smart business, to Ryan's point. That's convenience. That's, of course, you need to do that. Do I need chocolates on my pillow? Do I need turn down service? Do I need those things that to me mean hospitality? I need a friendly face, but I don't know if I need all that stuff in a hospital setting.
But if you went to if you did the mobile check-in and it didn't work and you had to go back to the front desk and then the key card didn't work and all those types of things, the overall hospitality experience for you is going to go down. Even if you wanted the turn down service and the chocolates on your pillow.
I'm just being pedantic with hospitality. I'm hearing it a higher level of service that I don't think is required. Should you have good patient satisfaction scores? Yes. But if you got somebody whose arm is cut off and you're fighting to save their lives and you're not sweet and nice to them in the moment, you're just curt because you got to save their life. I don't know what people want.
There's that. What do you want? So essentially, it's like specificity, please, because words mean things. Like when we're talking about hospitality, when we're versus what we're talking about, which is a patient experience, we need to be specific. So, all right, I hear you. I think
I'm in the minority. I guess I'll be honest, but really, I've come full circle on it. Not full circle, because I'm exactly in the same place. I've done a 180 on it.
180. There you go. Math.
You're the other half of the circle. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do a 360. I did a 180.
Blessings. All right, let's get into our main topic, and that is the future of the CMO. So with this report, one of the opportunities we saw here was around the idea of, you know, there's two roads to verge of whether you were going to go for in camp one, the land grab, or we're going to take on experience, you're going to take on maybe even some cons, some strategy and the like. And then there's also the other camp, which is that less is more. But for this particular episode, we're really going to talk a bit more. And while we have Ryan on, is that opportunity you have with some elements of the land grab. But I don't know, Chris, if you want to kind of set up more of the context from the Joe Public retreats you've attended and surveys you've done.
Yeah, we did a lot of research and had a lot of conversations. And this idea of span and control kept coming up. But I think what was... There was two things that jumped out at the Joe Public retreat where we had really in-depth conversations about this. One was, should marketers own the experience, which is a completely different opportunity that we talk about in the study, and we'll get to a different time. But the other was just communications, right? There's all kinds of different ways to expand your span of control. It could be pricing strategy. It could be strategic planning. It could be business planning. There's a lot. But comms led to a really charged conversation because there were a few people in the room. There were a number that already owned it. So there were CMCO, but there were a few that had just kind of inherited it. They didn't intentionally go after it, but they were asked to take it on. And they were very honest about their struggles with it. It is not marketing, I think is a fair way to put it, in terms of the demand that it requires, the speed it requires. There's all kinds of different things. And we call it out in the paper, but it's definitely worth a deeper dive because it's a great opportunity for a CMO who wants more power and authority and drive more value in the organization to own comms, but you got to know what you're in for. And I think that's where Ryan can help us.
Yeah, I think you hit on all the key points there, Chris. I mean, it really requires kind of a mindset shift. You are, you know, 90% of the times in the communications world within a health system, you're focused on, you know, what issue is popping this week? Is it a policy threat? Is it, a payer negotiation? Did we have something horrible happen in our ED? Those types of things that are naturally just going to suck up time. It's going to take away resources, and you aren't going to be focused on the strategic approach that you're taking to build the reputation or build the brand of the organization. So it is really, I can totally see how, you know, as a comms guy, how that can be a real struggle for folks that have primarily grown through the organization on the marketing side because the demands are different. With that being said, I think over the last 5 years in particular, so essentially since March of 20, both in healthcare and beyond healthcare, reputation has become a far bigger focus for boards, for leadership, for C-suite, which presents a tremendous opportunity for CMOs to influence and build that reputation, to not only protect it when something goes wrong, but to build that reputation over time. What are you known for in the market that you stand for? That takes all of the other types of things that you're focused on the marketing side. But how are you making sure that from a reputational perspective, you're top of mind for not only patients, but policymakers, your employees, all those types of things are so huge. And you can just count the number of things that systems have had to navigate over the last 5 years, whether it was the initial threat of COVID, whether it was the internal challenges on staffing when staff either were departing or where we were dealing with travel nurses, those types of things. You've seen increased union activity inside of organizations. Now you're seeing it on the policy side. You're seeing it on through broader industry attacks against hospitals as being too expensive. Like, all those types of things kind of ding at your overall brand perception among consumers and among those you serve. So I think if you're able to find the right mindset to allow you to kind of turn one side off and on to kind of support both the brand and the communications and reputation pieces, you can be tremendously successful. and even on kind of overseeing all of it, making sure you have the right deputies on your team that are able to focus on that from a day-to-day perspective, while allowing you to still set that larger organizational strategy perspective and how reputation can influence that. So that's just kind of my thinking there.
Yeah, that was my initial thought, is like, you know, who's the team under you to help navigate that? Because like the concerns around like all of this stuff of like the comms being this completely different world of like always on situations. And it's going to be about like who is, that was going to be my question, is like your thoughts around, you know, how do you set up a team or your even your role, your department, so that you can stay more high level visionary while making sure that those things are covered?
Yeah, I mean, empowering the team is huge. Particularly the larger the health system that you operate. I mean, you can't be everywhere at once. And so having somebody that has grown up and developed that communications focus, we see a lot of organizations hire former journalists for that role. We see a lot of folks hire former agency folks to serve that role. Folks that are able to quickly move from one problem to another or one task to another are incredibly helpful. And then, Des, to your point, what is that overall vision for not only the entire marketing and communications department, but what is your vision for how we want to enhance the reputation of the organization? Now, a lot of times that may ladder to an organizational strategic plan or those types of things. Providing and having that kind of delineation of work is going to be incredibly successful for you to allow you to manage the day-to-day, but also still be out there and not get distracted by the day-to-day, so you can have that longer-term strategy out there. That's the biggest challenge we see, at least on the communication side within health systems. They are so challenged to manage the immediate day-to-day needs that there is no focus on the longer term and, you know, 6 month, 12 month, 18 month reputation planning piece. It just doesn't happen because they don't have time to do it.
We see that take shape all the time is in the payer provider world. So when you've got a health system with a contract that's coming up from United or Cigna or whoever, you know, we do a lot of work with health systems to help them navigate those difficult negotiations and sometimes even going public with the fight. But so often it's left to like the last 4 months or the last 6 months was like, oh gosh, this is not going to be easy. And it turns into a crisis rather than having an always on strategy that requires the ability to kind of be above it all, to think in those terms and act in those terms rather than just running to each fire. That's a pretty big fire. Like, you don't want to be left with a, you know, opening the door and there's a raging payer provider negotiation in the room. If you've got to that point, you really miss an opportunity to what you're talking about, Ryan, of being strategic, because that's going to help you in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. I mean, the number of systems that we're working with over the last, frankly, 2 years that have recognized that it is really hard to manage your reputation when you're in the middle of the fire, like a payer negotiation, or we're going to announce a major merger, those types of things. It's hard to build friends and allies in that time. It's requiring a longer term approach and a longer term just strategic vision of how you're going to manage your reputation in that market. How are we reaching policymakers, employers, community partners, all those types of organizations well in advance of when we need to ask them for a favor? Hey, we need you to take our side versus United Healthcare's during this negotiation. You're able to do that through what we call kind of agnostic reputation building over time. And more of our payer clients and more of our M&A clients are seeing the value of doing that 6, 12, 18 months before they know a major negotiation is probably going to be out there in the public realm.
Yeah, along those lines of the M&A, I was thinking about that. What are then the opportunities? If especially from a person coming from more of a marketing and a brand standpoint, because oftentimes I know when talking to you and our clients, most of the M&A focus has come to more of a comms communications focus and lens. But what are some of the opportunities that a chief marketer that's over comms or over brand, like what are some opportunities there that they have?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things to think about. One, there's kind of the broader positioning of the organization well in advance of when a deal might be announced. So what are the three things that make us different in Seattle, Washington, or whatever it is, whatever market you're in? How are we different than the other system across town? And those are things that you can come up with 3-4 pillars that we're going to hammer on. It's going to be, you know, our clinical excellence, or it's going to be our commitment to our community. Like those types of things we can have out there. When you get closer to announcing a partnership or an M&A deal, A lot of things that you can think about are related to kind of the why does this matter to me as a consumer? Why does it matter to me as a stakeholder? What does it get me? And thinking about more, not only reputation building, but what are the operational things we can point to? It's going to be easier for you to get an oncology appointment because we're expanding the number of oncologists within our system as a result of the deal. Or we're going to invest $150 million in a community health clinic network, and we're going to set these up all over the state. Like, those types of tangible things that make it real for folks are things that often don't get announced when the deal is announced. That's something that comes years after, because these integrations take forever. The organizations that are going to get communities excited, and frankly, the number one goal during an M&A transaction is just to get the deal through so we don't run into opposition. If we're able to provide a little bit more of those specifics of what we're going to have come as a result of us coming together, that will be more successful. And they can tie back to your organizational pillars, what makes us different, all those types of things that I talked about, you know, what's authentic to your organization. But being tangible for the stakeholder groups is in critical importance, all the way down to internal. I mean, the number of M&A deals I've been on have been fascinating to see some of the internal questions that they get. They'll hear about a benefit that one side has and be like, is that coming over here? Like, are we now getting free massages every 2 months as part of our health plans? They get really tangible on those types of things. So how do we make sure that we demonstrate that to all the different stakeholders involved in a deal?
I would add one thing that we're going to spend a lot more time talking about this year in terms of M&A, and that is with brand. And it's really interesting to think about it related to comps, because most brand decisions when it comes to M&A are just literally put in a box and put on a shelf and brought back out, you know, a year after the close. Folks, for all kinds of reasons, just do not want to deal with brand identity, naming, positioning, any of that as part of the M&A deal. And there's valid reasons for it, but it causes a lot of issues, right? You're way better off if you can actually deal with that at the deal stage. And the trick of this is somebody has to be aware of that, because it's not going to be the C-suite. It's not going to be the CFO. Might be a chief strategy officer, but probably not. It's probably the CMO. But the CMO will not be in the room for a lot of that, but the CCO will be. The CCO has an opportunity, because of the communications that are required, at some point, they'll be in the room pre-close for all kinds of reasons. So if you as a CMO also have communications, that brings you into the conversations at a point where you could actually advocate for dealing with and addressing brand at that time, rather than being handed a challenge, you know, a year later. So it's an interesting kind of backdoor way to get into something that's really critical. Again, we're going to be spending more time about this over the next 6 months, because it's something, given our M&A activity that we've been involved in, we see time and time again. And it really does cause harm to the brand. It causes harm to the organizations that are involved, and it costs money. So when you know all of those things, you might rethink where brand plays a role in M&A, but we'll get to more of that later. But comms might be a way to get in that conversation earlier.
Yeah, because you really think about the individuals you're talking about, you know, a leader of comms is not thinking about what this brand looks like three years from now. They're thinking about, okay, what do I need to do to make sure that this deal is well received when we announce it? And so having that different perspective in there allows us in the organization to anticipate some of those potential issues that naturally we know are going to come up, and have that different lens of thinking of what this impact for the brand long term.
What is it that makes it so that the chief comms officer is more so in the room than the CMO? And, you know, how can we kind of flip that, I guess?
I think it really depends on the organizational structure. You know, sometimes it's a CMO, CCO joint role with a single individual. Sometimes they're split, like Chris is talking about. I think that just goes back to kind of the overarching kind of vision and connectivity that has to happen across the Marcom's enterprise to ensure alignment. On these sensitive types of issues, you know, obviously if the comms lead is underneath the marketing lead, but is part of the conversations, then seemingly the marketing lead is aware of this and kind of inserting themselves to have a seat at the table, not to drive the announcement of the deal, but to really ensure that the full perspective of the impact of the brand are included is important. So I think a lot of it is just making sure internal alignment, having a team that trusts each other, is obviously huge. And then having a C-suite that knows the importance and is open to the perspective of both sides from a marketing and from a communications perspective to bring those perspectives into the room when these conversations are happening, when these critical deal points are being discussed, all those types of things that impact the longer term organizational health.
Yeah, I mostly asked, thank you, just because of, you know, throughout this report, you know, there's topics of conversation around, like, for example, how can you be that market whisperer? But then also conversations around how can you actually be more in the room to then offer up that perspective. And so it is really an interesting take of being able to have, even though at the front end of it, it feels like, oh my God, there's all this stuff, the issues and crisis and mergers and acquisitions and oh my, that's being dropped on my plate that I now have to figure out. But like you said, if you have the right team set up, you have some deputies, you have some really strong folks that can help really lead that day-to-day charge, that gives you more of that opportunity to zoom out, be in those rooms, and really thinking about all of the different ways that this whatever strategic thing is happening or purchase or what have you, so that you can be more thoughtful in that moment and not just kind of inundated with like, oh God, I got to get this other thing out, if you're not being able to pay attention.
Exactly.
The thing I'd add too is that the point about the deputies just can't be overstated. It can't be overstated. We don't want to understate it. I'm confusing whether it should be overstated or understated. It's important, my Elmer Fudd. It's important because I think it's fair to say that for a long time, I've been around this health system marketing gig for a long time. You would see CMOs who rose up through the comms, because that was really back in the day, and I mean the 90s, there was far more comms than marketing people. And so a lot of people would elevate to the top marketing position through comms, and you would see some struggles with marketing strategy, with the marketing mindset. And I think it's fair to say that there are pure marketers, pure brand people that would struggle with comms. It's going to be rare to find somebody who's like super strong in both marketing and comms, because those are both, while very related, completely different disciplines. They're different disciplines. And so to even expect one person to be great at both is probably a bad expectation. You certainly can have experience and it can handle it. But if you're a marketer, that's what your experience is, that's where your strength is, and you want to take on comms, you need to have that lieutenant who is all about comms. And I would say vice versa, right? If your strength is really communications, but you're in a CMCO role, you need to have a super strong marketing lieutenant. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just an important call out, right? I don't think there's any CMCO that's like the best at both of those. That would be a real unicorn.
Yeah, they say the best leaders are not the ones that like know all the things, of making sure that they have a team of folks underneath them that know all the things. All right, any other final thoughts around like just really the opportunities, or even just kind of the watch outs to really like set yourself up for being in Camp One?
I wouldn't wait till you get asked the question by a CEO or a leader about kind of where and how everything fits together. I think that's of critical importance to ensure you are continually thinking about this and understanding kind of the vision and where you want to go, so that it doesn't come as a surprise. Having that strong POV of kind of what fits for you makes the most sense. But Chris, obviously, you've talked to a lot more folks on this type of topic.
Yeah, and you want to carve your own path as much as you can. If you're being handed in the cases we even know of, it's probably because it's not working well. So you're being handed a bit of a problem in the department for one reason or the other. And so that's not a great place to start. You want to own it because you have a plan for it and it's something you want to take on. So yeah, be proactive. Also, breaking news, HBO just announced that they're changing the name again, and it's now going to be called Maxpo. So that will be happening after they go back to HBO Max, and then they're going to switch again to Maxpo. So I want to make sure we got that in there. Dan?
I like Maxpo. Let's go with that.
Maxpo. Oh, wow. Well, we'll wrap on that. So be proactive. Be proactive. For all of you listening, don't forget that we want to hear from you. So shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com so that your questions may be featured in our next episode. And make sure to share with the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review and ratings on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars, and all of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
3, 2, 1.